Welcome to Chapter 18, where we discuss brokerages, account types, and annuities. I'll tell you, the stock market is bad. It's even worse than a divorce. You lose 50% of your net worth, but you still keep your spouse. I don't know that this is a Rodney Dangerfield joke, but it sure sounds like one, so we're going to give him credit. And have you ever wondered why they call us brokers? Yeah, right. Oh, someone... In this chapter, we'll discuss where you're going to store your securities, where you're going to store your stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and also discuss different types of accounts, and then thwack annuities. There were three different types of brokerage firms, but now the really only two. There's the full-service traditional Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley. They provide investment recommendations and take you to the steakhouse and golfing and, yeah, charge you accordingly. And then we used to have discount versus deep discount brokers, but it seems like most everybody now is deep discount. There are still a few of the sometimes called mom-and-pop shops like LPL Financial and A.G. Edwards and the like, Edward Jones, where you'll still get personal service, but you won't be charged as much as Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley. But the biggest movement has been in the deep discount, where Schwab used to be a discount brokerage. Now they're joined the ranks of the Robin Hoods and the, well, Scottrade was bought by TD Ameritrade, which was then bought by Schwab, which they emphasize technology to reduce brokerage costs dramatically. So what can you expect to pay for each? What kind of service can you expect from each? Well, think about it, right? Commissions then and now. Traditionally, virtually all brokerage firms made their money from commissions. It used to be that full-service brokers would charge you $70 to $100 or more per trade. And then the discount broker started at 45, then went down to 29, then went down to 19, 13, right. And now the deep discount brokers part charge for 5 to 10 or even less, zero commissions. And the mutual fund companies didn't stand still. They now offer brokerage firms. Yes, of course, it looks like Fidelity, but it's a different company. It's a Fidelity Brokerage Services as opposed to Fidelity Funds. But they might as well be one company. It's just, to us, it looks like one company. And then a few companies experimented with $0 commissions. One failed, one now charges $5. But the one that has been most successful with that is Robinhood. I think, I'm not a big fan of Robinhood. I don't use their service, so I really shouldn't say. But from what I can glean, it sure looks like they're trying to make it into a video game, and they're trying to get you excited about trading as often as possible, saying, it's free, and if you still think it's free, go back to chapter 3 and realize that, no, you're getting charged. They're not doing this for their health. I mean, obviously, if you don't eat, you don't, you know, get sick, but yes, they're charging you. How can a brokerage firm make money on a $5 or even a $0 commission? Does this slide look familiar? Scottrade now is owned by TD Ameritrade, which is now owned by Schwab, but Scottrade Incorporated receives remuneration for directing orders to particular broker-dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm, and the source and amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. But in Scottrade's defense, at least they included this, even though they don't want you to read it. That's why they put it all upper caps and use words like remuneration. They put it in every email confirmation that they sent you. But still, what's going on? You know what's going on. And if you don't, again, go back to chapter 3 or the third presentation where we see that you're not getting the best price. Now, have brokerage costs been reduced? Yes, dramatically. But still, it makes me upset that they're not that people like Robinhood are not being very transparent about how they make their money. As slide number five, as the competition for your business has gotten fiercer, the methods of charging investors for investment services have gotten more creative. Alternative methods of soaking your, I mean, I'm charging your clients. Several years ago, Merrill Lynch experimented with charging people $3,000 a year for unlimited trades, but they don't have that program anymore. There are many other methods, but the modern day agogo way to soak your customers, charge for brokerage services, is called assets under management. Now, hopefully you remember this back from chapter 2 when we talked about the share classes of mutual funds. If not, go back and review it, because you're the investment guru. You have to understand share classes. You have to understand how people are being charged for their mutual funds. Assets under management, also called wealth management account, wrap account, investor advisor account. Instead of charging commissions per transaction, the brokerage firm tacks on a yearly 1 to 2% assets under management, wealth management fee. We're not your brokers anymore. We're your wealth managers. Remember the F shares, the FI shares, the I shares? These types of programs are being pushed by all the major full-service brokerage firms, and there are many flavors of this program. The latest wrinkle to this method is the new performance-based wealth management program. Slide number seven. Performance-based wealth management. Only pay your advisor when you make money. The advisor receives 10 to 20% of your earnings when you make money, but the advisor receives nothing when you lose money or don't make anything. It's a variation of the way hedge funds charge their shareholders, marketed to high net worth individuals. And the first one I saw was in a presentation of Denham and Associates, which is based here actually in Del Mar area. And when I saw this, I said, you know, the first, I mean, it's very tempting, is it? You know, you only get charged when they make you money. If they don't make you money, if they lose money, they don't charge you. I thought the first bear market comes along, they're going to have to change their business model. And indeed, that's what happened. And when 2008 to 2009 came along, they had to alter their fee structure. They charge you now much less if you lose money or don't make money. But still, the reality is, you're going to have the potential to pay far more for your investment services using this method. And if you don't believe me, go back to chapter 2 and look at the difference between the A shares and the F shares over time. Yes, but as I said, I don't even remember this story. The one guy said, oh, what are you worried about? Because I said, I don't think this is in the best interest of the clients. And the guy just looked at me and said, what are you worried about? Send them a bottle of wine on their birthday. Take them to the steakhouse golfing. They'll love you. Okay. Yeah. And that guy, I mean, obviously, he was oozing of money. So, not for me. Thank you very much. How about anti-brokerage firms? Huh? How about direct reinvestment plans, DRIPs? Remember these from Chapter 3? Bypass the middleman. Many of the large, well-established companies offer their own dividend reinvestment plans. Some are totally free. Some are very close to free. If you remember the presentation in Chapter 3, I was at an investment club, and we had Sempra Energy, SDG&E, and they had a DRIP. And every once in a while, every quarter, we get charged 6 cents or 9 cents. It's very, very little money. Well, they're not perfect, right? What if you had to sift through 18 different statements, right? You have 18 different drips. But there are some companies like Interactive Brokers that allow you to keep all your drips together. And now most all of the major brokerage firms, we offer it, allow you to have direct investment plans, which will automatically buy more shares with your dividends, which is, you know, basically what you want. Unless you're living off the dividends, unless you're using the dividends for income, you want to have more shares. And before, you had to wait until you gathered up enough cash in your account then to buy more shares. and, you know, get charged a commission. This is, you know, many years ago from, and so some of us still charge a commission. but now, no, automatically without a charge or very, very little charge, you buy more shares of that company. Very, very cool. I'm a big fan of drips. Okay, now let's change gears and take a look at the different types of accounts. And here's where some confusion comes in, because people will ask the question, well, what kind of money can you make in a Roth IRA? What am I going to get in a Roth IRA? That's the wrong question. It's, the question should be, what kinds of returns can I get with the investments that are located in my Roth IRA? I am not very savvy with graphics. So these are supposed, on slide number 9, these are supposed to be bins or buckets or bolsas, containers. And there are two major types of containers. There are taxable accounts, regular accounts, regular taxable accounts, non-qualified is what the IRS calls them. And then there are qualified, tax-qualified accounts. The vast majority of them are retirement accounts, but there are also educational savings accounts, health savings accounts, flexible savings accounts. These are all identified in the Internal Revenue Code. With a regular taxable account, you can have any type of security, real estate, even gold if you wanted to. That's a little bit more tricky. In your account, there's no limits on your contribution. There's no limits on the investment types. You pay taxes every year. That's why it's sometimes called a taxable account, a regular account. The IRS, as I said, calls them non-qualified accounts. Retirement accounts, educational savings accounts, health savings accounts, they have strict limits on contributions and on the investment types. So notice, in the bolsa here, of a taxable account, we can basically put anything. Stocks, bonds, options, futures, shorting, mutual funds also. But with a retirement account, an educational savings account, health savings account, with a tax-qualified account, we are limited. Stocks are risky enough. So you can have bonds, mutual funds, cash. Actually, you can put gold into an IRA. Don't do it. It's very dangerous. And you can actually put real estate into an IRA. But again, don't do it. You got to know what you're doing, or find a qualified, competent third-party administrator to hold, trustee to hold on to the funds, because to the items, because you can. Oh, there's a link to an article of somebody, of a couple who put gold in their IRA and then wound up, you know, having to pay the IRS a tremendous sum of money because they didn't know what they were doing. So although there are many subtle and not so subtle differences, the major differences are how they are taxed by the IRS, how much you can contribute, and what you can have in the account. And we're going to now go through many of the very popular retirement tax-qualified accounts. Slide number 10, types of retirement accounts, types of retirement tax-qualified accounts. Well, they basically fall into two categories, pre-tax, or sometimes called before-tax, and post-tax, sometimes called after-tax. Do you want a tax break now, or do you want a tax break later? The pre-tax are far more older than the post-tax. So 401ks, 403bs, 457s, 401as, what silly names. Where do they come from? The section, the provision in the Internal Revenue Code, section 401k, which says if your employer does this and you do that, Domini Domini Sanctus, you can put away money, tax deferred, grows tax deferred until you retire, and then when you take it out, you get taxed then. But that makes sense, because in retirement, we're usually in a lower tax bracket than when we are working, right? Yeah. Well, if not, congratulations. If you're in a higher tax bracket because you're taking out so much money from your retirement accounts, I'm very, very happy to hear that. I want to congratulate you. In fact, that's what I hope happens to you and all my students and my clients. Yes, it's a terrible champagne problem. The traditional IRA, now it used to be called the IRA, now it's called the traditional IRA, to differentiate it from the Roth IRA, is for everyone. And 401ks and 403bs are for people who have jobs where the employer sponsored them. That's why they're sometimes called employer-sponsored plans. For smaller companies, smaller businesses, there's the SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, the KEO, which is no longer offered to new programs, to new businesses. But if you have one, you can grandfather it in. You get a tax break now. Your deductions, you get to deduct the contributions from your income tax. The money grows tax-deferred, and you pay taxes in retirement. Very cool. Starting in the late 90s, there was a new kid on the block called the Roth IRA, named after William Roth, the senator who proposed the idea. And these don't give you a tax break now. They give you a tax break later. You put the money in now after tax, post taxes. It grows, you know, doesn't you don't have to pay taxes as it grows. But then when you go to take the money out, it's tax-free. Yippee! And notice we put Roth 401k, Roth 403b in quotes because that's not their legal names. They're just the same plans, 401ks, 403bs, that allow you to put in money after taxes. Okay? So these are the two main categories of retirement accounts, pre-tax and post-tax. So let's go to the next slide. Come on, sweetheart. Okay, there you go. The granddaddy is the IRA, the Individual Retirement Arrangement. Is that what it really stands for? Yeah, that's the actual name, but nobody uses that. Everybody calls it the Individual Retirement Account. It's the most popular personal retirement account. It's now, as we said, referred to as the traditional IRA to differentiate it from the Roth IRA. And here's where some confusion starts to set in. It's the tax code, remember? Anyone with earned income can contribute to a traditional IRA. Anyone. Doesn't matter how much money you make, you can still contribute to an IRA. Now, here's the condition. Sometimes those contributions may not be tax deductible. They normally are, but if you have a retirement plan at work, if your employer offers a 401k or some other employer-sponsored plan, and you make over a certain amount of money, then you can still contribute. You just cannot deduct them from your income taxes in that year. So here's where it gets a little tricky. You're going to have some part of it that's post-tax and some part that is after-tax. And so you have to keep track of your end-of-year statements in perpetuity. Because when you go to take the money out, you don't want to be taxed twice. You want to say, hey, this was, you know, post-tax. I don't have to pay taxes on this again. I don't like this. But that's part of the tax code. The investment grows tax-deferred, and you pay taxes on the money as you withdraw it once you're in retirement. Normally, after 59 and a half years of age, mandatory withdrawals. Once you're 59 and a half, you can take the money out without any penalty. You still have to pay the taxes. And there is a way I actually could take the money out before without paying taxes, but then you have to go to the IRS and say, I'm 58 years old, I want to retire now. And they bless it and kiss it, and they give you a schedule on how to take the money out. But it used to be that you had to start taking the money out at age 70 and a half. Well, now it's 72, and eventually it's going to be 73, and supposedly it's going to go up to 75. Oh, well. So remember that once you get older, because if you don't take the money out, the penalties are outrageous. They're just ridiculous. 50% of what you were supposed to take out. Now, I've known people who didn't do that because they didn't really understand what they were supposed to do. And I said to them, I said, you know, start taking it out now. And the IRS never came after them. I think that the IRS realizes that people are confused about this too, but they might. So do what you're supposed to do. Take the money out once you hit 72, and then 73, and then 74, and then 75. Excuse me. And the IRS has many cousins and siblings and in-laws. The 401k for corporations and private businesses. The 403b, the 457, the 401A for public organizations, the SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, the Solo 401K, the SARSEP, the KEO, those are all for smaller businesses. And as we said, the KEO and the SARSEP are no longer available for new plans. If you have one, you're grandfathered in. The SEP IRA is cool if you are a sole practitioner, because it allows you to put away a lot of money. Say you're a doctor just working by yourself, or a lawyer or something like that. The Simple IRA is great for small businesses that really don't want to deal with the headaches of 401ks, and they're very, very simple. I'm a big fan of the Simple. The Solo, obviously, it sounds, you know, for somebody who's basically a solo practitioner, and forget the SARSEP and the KEO. What I like about the KEO, though, is the name, KEO. It reminds me of the Wizard of Oz at the end, where they're going, yo, yo, KEO. Yeah, I know, it's bizarre where my brain, my mind goes somewhere. Anyway, the big cousin now, the big brother, the little brother, the Roth IRA. Very, very cool. Post-tax contributions. And again, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b, we put in quotes. They all work very much like the traditional IRA, except for the Roth options, except for the after-tax options. So let's take a look at an example of a 401k, 403b, traditional IRA. You contribute via your paycheck or your checking account $100. Now, it depends on what tax bracket you're in. And we talk about this in detail in the Business 121 Principles of Money Management, used to be called Financial Planning and Money Management, because it is important to understand your marginal tax rates. Most people don't. But let's say you're in the 25% tax bracket for the feds and the 8% for the California, which is not usual, but it happens. So look, you put in $100. Now, the feds are going to give you $25. The state of California is going to give you $8. Well, not really. They're just going to take $25 fewer for federal withholding and $8 fewer for California withholding, which means you get a government subsidy of $33. You see your take-home pay only reduced by $67 if it goes through your paycheck. And, of course, if you give it through your, you know, if you contribute through your checking account or your savings account off from your bank, or you write a check, you're not going to see this. You're just going to have $33 fewer to pay to the state of California and the feds. And we're not even discussing any potential matches that your company, if you have a 401k, gives you. Some companies will give you 50 cents for every dollar you put in, up to a certain amount, or $1 for every dollar you put in. So you put in $100 and you're going to get an extra $50, or maybe $100. Now, who's going to give you a 50% or 100% return on your money in one day? Only your boss, right? I know you don't like your boss, and I don't blame you sometimes, but this company is going to be very generous to you. Why? Because they want you to go away when you retire. Because it used to be that they would take that same money and put it into a pension fund that they had to manage. And then, of course, if you worked there all your life, you'd get a pension from that company. But those are gone. Those are going away or gone. Because, first of all, people don't usually work for 40 years for the same company. And also, it just makes more sense for the money to follow the employee, right? Because you might not work there very long and you're going to go to another place. There's potential great advantages to that, and there's potential disadvantages to that. We could discuss those at detail, but think about it, folks. By investing prudently and wisely, consistently, with an eye toward long-term growth of capital and income, you could build for yourself a pension plan that would make the pension plans that the folks, you know, 100 years ago, 50 years ago got, look weak. Yeah, you could do a whole lot better. But you could do a whole lot worse if you don't contribute consistently, or you chase after every next big thing, or you panic when the markets fall. So it's a dual-edged sword. But it's still very, very cool. You put in $100, you only see your paycheck reduce $67, plus you might get an extra $50 or $100. What's the catch? What's the catch? Slide 14. Well, you pay income tax on any amounts withdrawn in retirement, But as we said, people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket, and if you're not, congratulations. Too much champagne, what shall we ever do? And if you withdraw the funds before retirement, you pay the income tax, and you must pay a 10% penalty. Now, the IRS doesn't call it a penalty. They call it an additional tax. It's a penalty. But there are some exceptions. First-time home purchase, I think the amount is still $10,000, which is, you know, woefully inadequate. They should raise that. Higher education for you or your children. Medical disability, financial hardship, which my understanding is it's hard to get accepted by the IRS. So you're not going to touch this money for 30, 40 years. You're going to give it a kiss, send it on its way, all right? And then it's going to come back to you manyfold, assuming you were consistent, prudent, long-term oriented investors, which you all are now. Thank you so very much. Slide 15. Now, how about the Roth IRA, the fourth Roth 401k, 403b? You contribute $100, either through your checking account or your paycheck. What do you get back from the feds? Or the state of California? Yeah, right. Nothing. They don't give you anything because it's after tax. You have to pay the taxes before you put the money in, and then the money is after tax or post-tax. So your disposable income is reduced by $100, and of course, we're not even talking about any match that your company might have given you. So why would you contribute to a Roth IRA? Well, here's the answer, folks. Because some, you're going to do it, right? I think hope is hope. And eventually people are going to say, well, why do you contribute to a Roth IRA? And here's the answer. Because a Roth IRA is so cool! Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. No other investment account option comes close, in my humble opinion. There's some scenarios that you could work out where it made sense better for you to pay the whatever. Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. And I think, I've been thinking about this for a while, but maybe it's not going to happen because old people vote. I'm one of them. But I think they're going to get rid of them. I think they're just going to say, okay, no more new Roth IRAs. If you have one, you can keep it, but we'll see. They're very popular. Plus, here's the very cool thing about the Roth IRA. You can withdraw the contributions at any time without penalty because you already paid taxes on the contributions, right? Now, there's some things that say you have to wait 5 years. I think that's for something else. I think that's we have to find that out because someone just said, oh, no, you can't do it right away. So, yes, you can. I know people have done it. Maybe they just didn't get caught. But some people say you have to wait 5 years. I think that's for the conversion. If you convert your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, then you have to wait 5 years. But I don't think that's not the case for the contributions because you've already paid taxes on them, right? They're yours. This makes the Roth IRA also an excellent intermediate-term investment account. Purchase of a house or other high-ticket item, great for college expenses. Why? Because when you filled out that FAFSA form, not the FAFSA form, but the FAFSA form, they didn't ask how much was in your Roth IRA. They ask how much are in your checking accounts, savings accounts, but they don't ask how much are in your retirement accounts. So when people say to me, especially in our income brackets, you know, not the very wealthy, but should I put aside money for my son or my daughter's education? I said, in an educational savings account, I said, have you funded your Roth IRA yet? And they say, no. I said, do that first, okay? Because you put money into into an educational savings account, 529 plan, the other one, I forget the other one called Coverdell or something. Whatever money you put in there is going to be taken away from your financial aid if you qualify. Plus, you don't get to take advantage of the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifelong Learning Tax Credit. So it's really a big disincentive for people in the middle class. Now, if you know that you're not going to get any financial aid, you're very wealthy, then sure, put it in a 529 plan. It's actually a very good deal. So, as we said, a Roth IRA is so cool, but slide number 17, a Roth IRA is not for everyone. Now, it really is. We're not allowed to say that. We're not supposed to say that, you know, because everyone's different, right? But everyone should have a Roth IRA. But there's limitations on your contributions. You can get around it. It's called the Roth backdoor.
only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $146,000 or less in 2024, and married couples with an adjusted gross income of $230,000 or less in 2024 can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. And if you don't qualify, congratulations. But you can still contribute to the Roth IRA anyway, huh? See if you can follow me on this. And if you can't, don't worry. Tax code's broken. If you find that you've made over the limit, or you already know you're over the limit, you can recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA. That's the verb the IRS uses. Recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA, which doesn't have the same income limitations. It doesn't matter how much you make with a traditional IRA. Before you file your taxes, actually you have, I think, until October 15th to do it, but do it before you file your taxes. And then immediately, on the same day, turn in the paperwork at the exact same time, you convert the traditional IRA back into the Roth. That's, yeah, I know. Who voted for these bozos? Oh, yeah, we did. Well, everyone can agree that the tax code is broken, but we can't agree on how to fix it. Why they have this income limitation on Roth IRAs, I don't know, because they don't have it on traditional IRAs, but they do. But with what's called the Roth backdoor, you can get around it. Now, you know, consult a professional because it's a little tricky. There's a few caveats you have to worry about, but it is very cool for people who are making more than those limits. Here are the limits for 2024 for your traditional IRA or your Roth IRA. They've just gone up. $7,000 a year. That's a lot of money, folks. I mean, a lot of people will look at it and say, it's not enough. And for them, there's the simple IRA, the 401k. But that's a lot of money. And you can contribute on behalf of your spouse. And you have until the tax deadline of the next year for you to contribute. You don't have to do it in that tax year. So, for example, you have until April 15th of 2025 to put in your contributions for 2024. But most people are going to be putting $50, $100 more if you can afford it every month. So you don't have to worry about that. And as we'll see, especially with the next slide, the contributions limits rise with inflation. And we're going to see that on the next slide, because the IRA limits don't change that often. They just changed last year. But the 401k, 403b limits change quite a bit. So let's take a look at those on slide 19. So here we're going back to 2020, and we see, look, they've been going up with inflation, and now 2024, you can put $23,000 into your 401k, 403b at work. If you're 50 or over, add another $7,500. So what I tell, I've noted this with younger married couples. Look, you both have a good job. Take one of your salaries and put it into put max out the 401k and then live off the other salary. And you do that if you're in your later 20s, early 30s, you do that for 5 years. And, you can stop contributing to your retirement account. Now, I don't think you should, but you could. And if two couples didn't believe me, two different couples at different times, and wanted to come in, I said, come in my office, I'll show you. And we showed them the illustrations that you've seen, the mutual fund illustrations. And the answer is, yeah, unless the world ends, of course. But yeah, so there is a loophole in the law, by the way. If you work in the public sector, for you to be able to contribute both $23,000 into a 403B and $23,000 into a 457. And of course, if you're 50 or older, do the $30,500. At first, I didn't believe this when they came public with this back in, 2002 or so? And I pinged the IRS. Took me quite a while to find somebody who knew what I was talking about. And it is true. You can do both. Pretty amazing. So think about it. If you're a married couple, now one, I say, what if he leaves me or what if she leaves me? Don't worry. In a divorce proceedings, retirement accounts are part of the stew that, I don't like to talk about divorce, but it happens, that gets divvied up. So one spouse is not going to run away with the 401k. Slide number 20. The Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. Now, they're not really called that. I mean, that's not what the IRS calls them. They just call them a 401k with after-tax contributions. And but everyone calls them the Roth because that's when they think of the Roth, they think of after-tax. The employer matches, though, will continue to be pre-tax contributions. Okay, so that gets a little tricky. You have to keep track of your end-of-year statements. Keep them forever so that when you go to take the money out, the IRS doesn't want you to pay taxes on the whole thing because you already paid taxes on the part that was after tax. And also, there's another part that I'm not that excited about. The contributions are not able to be withdrawn without penalty, as you can do with the Roth IRA. You can withdraw the penalty, withdraw the contributions without any taxes or penalties. So if you don't need the tax break now, this is a great option. However, I prefer the Roth IRA. But if they're going to match, that's a no-brainer, right? If you can benefit from the after-tax because you're in a lower tax bracket now, and they're going to give you a match, that's a no-brainer. Take the free money. Cool? And it's not an either-or situation. Personally, what I did is put the after-tax money, this is for many years, folks, in my wife and my account, my Roth IRAs, the after-tax, and the pre-tax went in the 403B at Southwestern Community College. So that's how I did it. But everyone's different, right? You decide. Slide 21. Now, this is cool. This is something you really should know. And if you do your taxes, make sure you don't forget this. And if you have it done, you should make sure you tell your tax preparer. I think the VITA software, as I remember, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, I think that picks it up pretty quickly. Make sure you show them, hey, I put money in a Roth or I put money in a 401k. Retirement savers may be eligible for tax credits, up to 50% of your contributions. So think about it. You put $50 a month into a Roth IRA, that's $600 a year. You might get $300 back, depending on your tax situation. And it's based on the adjusted gross income. It rises with inflation. So for 2024, it's $38,250 or less for single filers, which is, you know, not a great salary, but not bad. But a married couple, $76,500, not too shabby. And a head of household, $57,375. A tax credit is a dollar for a dollar reduction of your income taxes. So as I said, if you do your own taxes, don't forget this. If you have someone do them for you, make sure you tell them you put money away in a retirement account. And those tax software programs like TurboTax and TaxAct and FreeTax, whatever it is, they handle these very well. You just got to tell them. You got to make sure you tell them I put money in a Roth IRA. Okay, slide 22. Annuities. You know, I'm a licensed life insurance agent, folks. I've sold two policies in my whole life, and I'm not a really big fan of life insurance. But annuities are something out there that they're going to tempt you. And they have this siren song. Oh, we'll pay you a certain amount of money for as long as you live. We'll screw you for the rest of your life. Oh, no, no, no. The problem with these things, folks, is the fees. They just have outrageous fees, in my humble opinion. Remember the 1% or 2% for mutual funds? Well, they start at 2, 3, 4%. So the annuity options include a set number of years, or the most tempting one is the life income option for as long as you live. Or you could have a beneficiary as long as you and your spouse live. Of course, they'll pay you less there. The amount you get is based on your age, which of the above options you pick, how much you've contributed, and how well your annuity investments, if any, in the account have performed over time. Now, what's going on here? The life insurance companies, folks, they just turn around and they invest the money. They do what we have learned how to do all semester long. And fixed annuities invest in bonds. And then there are variable annuities which invest in mutual funds and can go down because they're basically investing in mutual funds. But folks, all they're doing is turn around and taking the money, turning it around, putting it someplace else and charging you, which you could do on your own. Now, of course, bonds are a little trickier. We usually invest in bond mutual funds. We the little people. And up until just recently, they were paying really low amounts of money because bonds were paying very low amounts of money. And so I was really upset with these. Now they're actually paying something a little bit decent, better. And there's an example on the website in Canvas, check it out, of a fixed annuity from a very good company called TIAA, Teachers Insurance Annuity Association. And before this past year, the amounts were pitiful, just really pitiful. But they've gone up now. But there's still, I think you're going to do a whole lot better if you invest it, especially if you put it in a balance fund. As we saw in Chapter 11 in retirement, I'm a big fan of balance funds. So what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of tax-deferred annuities? Well, you can fund them with retirement account dollars or after-tax dollars. And here's one thing that the annuities have that the other retirement accounts don't. There's no limit on your contributions. You have $2 million to play with. You can put it all on an annuity. I wouldn't do it, but you can. The interest that you earn is tax deferred, and then you pay taxes on any pre-tax annuity contributions and all tax deferred earnings as you withdraw them in retirement. But again, when in retirement, you're typically in a lower tax bracket. And if you're not, congratulations. But what's the downside? Oh, the fees are outrageous. Oh, 1.5% to 3%, and some take more. And that's on top, if it's a variable annuity, of what the mutual fund takes. But if you're a life insurance agent and you don't have any ethics whatsoever, oh boy, can you make a ton of money with these things. They pay tremendous commissions. And if you don't believe me, look at the chat, look at the links in Canvas and on the website where they're tempting the life insurance agents to sell as many of these damn things as they can, and they'll send them on an all-expense-paid 7-day Caribbean cruise for them and their spouses. It's not for the annuitants, not for the people buying the annuity. It's for the agents. And then there's a gentleman who's sort of made a living thwacking annuities, saying the dirty little secrets that the industry doesn't want to talk about. And they usually come with very restrictive provisions. You remember the B shares back in China? You probably don't, but that's all right. With the contingent deferred sales charge, where it started off at 5%, 4%, 3%, 2%, 1% after 5 years or whatever. Well, these guys started 20 years and 25 years. It's ridiculous. So please do, I apologize for being so down on them. There's another guy who's made a living. He talks gravelly, Ken Fisher. And he says, annuities suck. I hate them. And so I'm not the only one. Not the only one. I'm not a big fan of these things. But again, if you sell them, you can make a lot of money as a salesperson, as a representative. And so that's it for annuities. You can do a whole lot better after what you've learned here, dear students, in my humble opinion. But then, are there situations? Some people say, well, Frank, come on. There's got to be a situation where annuity makes sense. Yeah. If you already have so much money you don't care, okay, go out and take some of it and put it in an annuity. Great. Or if someone who's not very savvy or actually downright bad with money is going to inherit $700,000, whatever, or got some kind of something from an accident or something like that, a judgment or something like that, that person probably could do better off with annuity because it could set them up to pay a certain amount of money for the rest of their lives or whatever. But I still think they'd do better if they just hired somebody, a financial advisor, who would direct them to things that paid better over time and kept their fingers out of the cookie jar. But sometimes that's not an issue. That's just not an issue. These people, some people, they have the money, they're going to spend it. So if you just give them a little bit every month, okay, they'll spend that. But at least they won't go through the whole $700,000 in 3 years. So there you go. And that, dear students, is our discussion of brokerage firms, retirement accounts. Let's review our choices. Regular accounts, you pay taxes every year, no restrictions whatsoever. As much as you want to put into them, you can. You're going to pay taxes every year. There are two different types of retirement accounts, pre-tax, also called before-tax, and post-tax, also called after-taxes. And both are cool, but I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. And then annuities, high fees, but the earnings are tax deferred. And there's that tempting life option, which you'll see in the accompanying presentation on the TIAA annuity. That is our chapter 18, brokerages, account types, and annuities. And we are almost done, folks. One more little presentation on starting a business, the ultimate investment. See you in our last chapter, chapter 19, dear students. We're so proud of you.